Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's checkup from the neck up. Romeo goes to the tailor, or my flaming red Porsche. Well, folks, a while back I read a study that found college men and women think about romance, etc., about 25 to 30% of every waking hour. And now, some new studies tell us how to turn those daydreams into dreamy dates. The researchers had women look at pictures of men on a red background or a white one, and also pictures of men in a red shirt or blue. The women didn't know whether the color had anything to do with the experiment. They rated men in front of or wearing red significantly more attractive in many ways, including more romantically appealing, my fellow Romeos. Further research found this is because red signals higher status in the social pecking order. And evolutionary psychology tells us women want men with higher status because their babies are more likely to survive. They have more resources. Interestingly, despite the popular idea that red is sexy on women, men doing the same research routine did not rate women on or in red more attractive. But you ladies with a closet full of crimson don't cry, and here's why. Other researchers had men smell women's tears versus a salty solution that had been dripped down their faces. Not only did men smelling tears then rate pictures of women as less sexy, but fMRIs showed the part of a man's brain that gets turned on when he finds a woman a turn-on, which my wife tells me is about 99% of mine, actually turned off to tears. No word yet on whether men's tears charm the ladies or not, but just in case they do, if I ever finish paying college tuition and get the flaming red Porsche of my fantasy life, I'm going to tool around in a racing red jumpsuit and cry at every stoplight. I'm Dr. Rich, sensitive guy O'Neill. And if you're tuned in on the radio, ladies, check out my new look on YouTube, if you dare.
Welcome to 2 Minutes of Research at Upstate Medical University. This is Jim McKeever with Dr. Jennifer Moffitt, who studies the virus that causes chickenpox and shingles. It's called the varicella zoster virus, or just zoster. Dr. Moffitt explains how her research may lead to better treatments for shingles and why Upstate is a pretty good place to do this kind of research.
In fact, Upstate has one of the very best places to do this kind of work. And I've pursued my interest in finding new antiviral drugs to treat this virus. These would be drugs that could stop the virus from growing in people who had chickenpox or shingles. There are some drugs that are out there for this virus that are actually prescribed very often. These are acyclovir, Valtrex, but they're not ideal. They need to be given very early. They don't always work, and primarily they don't always reduce the nerve damage that the virus can cause. So in people who have shingles, it's a very painful infection, and it can cause long-lasting damage to the nerve where the pain lingers for months. So the research goal that we have is to find better drugs that would prevent this kind of nerve damage.
And I think what's important for people to know is this process will take years, decades.
Yeah, sometimes I think I have spent decades on it, and we'll spend many more. In fact, it takes so many years to do the basic science on the virus itself, to understand how it grows, and then find a drug that targets just those functions that we want to stop in the virus growth. So I'm positioned at that juncture between basic science and clinical trials, and that to me is one of the best rewards of these decades of research, is thinking that perhaps my work here and the work of our staff could turn into something that really helps people one day avoid that pain syndrome of zoster.
Thank you, Dr. Jennifer Moffitt of Upstate's Department of Microbiology and Immunology. Dr. Moffitt, by the way, will present her research on zoster at an upcoming international infectious disease conference in Europe. And that is your 2 minutes of research at Upstate.
Welcome back to HealthLink on Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. You know, few experiences can be as frightening and anxiety-provoking in a child's life and the life of their family as a child's hospitalization. But today, at Upstate's Golisano Children's Hospital, there's a program that provides a crucial safety net for children and families so they may navigate this experience with grace and compassion. Joining me this morning to tell us more about this life-giving program is Rachel Hannon, a certified child life specialist with Upstate's Golisano Children's Hospital. Welcome, Rachel.
Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. First, help us understand, what is a child life program? What does that mean?
So child life here at Golisano Children's Hospital and University allows us to help children and families kind of cope with the hospital experience. We do a lot of education about what being in the hospital is going to be like, what different procedures are going to be like, and just sort of helping kids and families to understand what all this medical terminology and all of their experiences are going to be like, just sort of giving them the tools to cope with the medical experience.
And that's probably done very developmentally in terms of, obviously, you'll explain something to a 3-year-old in a very different way than a 12-year-old.
Exactly. Child life specialists have extensive knowledge in child development. So you, before preparing any child or family, you want to look at their developmental level and sort of decide what's going to be the best way to prepare this child and family. So it's very individual based on what that child and family's needs are.
So it sounds like this, it's a preparatory kind of thing. In other words, it takes place in advance of the hospitalization?
Sometimes. Not all hospitalizations are planned. So a lot of times we can't prep families and kids for those. But once they come to us, whether it's through the emergency room or through the operating room, we then will help them understand whatever we're going to do to help them feel better or get better while they're at the hospital.
So there's a lot of time spent doing what? Give me examples of what you do to erase their fear or anxiety.
Sure. So I work particularly in the emergency room. So we do a lot of procedures in the emergency room. So my job mainly is to teach kids about what they're going to see, feel, hear, touch, smell, all the things that they're going to experience while in the emergency room, and then give them ways to cope with whatever we're doing to help them feel better. So working on different skills, whether that's deep breathing or imagery or just some distraction to sort of make that experience easier and less threatening.
So a lot of the concept here is that if they understand, they feel more in control.
Exactly.
Is that it? And also it sounds like you have certain tools or techniques that you use to give them the ability to perhaps be in control or calm them, self-soothe or calm themselves.
Exactly. A big part about child life is giving kids as many choices in a place where they don't always have a lot of choices. In the hospital, kids don't often have a choice of whether they want to get an IV or get blood drawn or have an X-ray. But we can give them different choices about maybe which arm do they want to have their IV in, or which do they want mom to hold their hand or dad to hold their hand? So there's different choices that we can provide for kids, which can give them a little bit more control in an environment where there often isn't a lot of control for them.
Yeah, it seems like the sense of control, even at a very early age, might allay some of that overwhelming fear that I think kids must feel.
Yeah, and it can be very empowering for them.
So do you do things... Obviously, this is ER. You're talking mm-hmm. in the ER setting where a lot of things are coming at them very quickly. But
sure.
Let's assume there's more of a protracted hospitalization kind of thing. What other kinds of things does a child life specialist do? And at what point do they interact, for example, during a hospitalization?
Sure. So if a patient was to say, have a scheduled surgery and then could be admitted to the hospital, they may receive a pre-op tour prior to coming to the hospital, and they can kind of tour where they would be sleeping. They can play with different medical equipment that they may see during their surgery, such as a mask or different things that they're going to see or feel.
So there'll be less surprises.
Exactly. And less surprises. And they kind of know more what to expect prior to the day that they come And then they would also tour where they, you know, the unit that they might be sleeping on. They might be able to see their room and the playroom and that kind of thing. So Child Life might interact prior to hospitalization, depending on if it's planned or not. If they did just come in from the ER and they were in the inpatient unit, the Child Life specialist would then see them, you know, the next day or whenever they come up to the unit, and just offer them support and make sure that they kind of know what's going on, you know, make sure that the kids' questions are answered, that their pain is, you know, being watched, and that they are just receiving a little extra support. They also provide play materials and things to keep kids busy so that they aren't getting bored. And also it just sort of makes the environment less threatening when kids have things that they're familiar with.
So it sounds to me like a very big role also, especially with children below the age of 10, I would think, is the effect that you have on the parents. I mean, it seems to me that you're treating the parents at the same time.
Absolutely. I think Child Life has plays a big part in encouraging parents to advocate for their own children, because Child Life is our big advocates for kids and families, but we're not always there. So sometimes encouraging parents to advocate for their own child and teaching them how to do that in a medical setting that may be really unfamiliar to them is a big part of Child Life's job.
So how do you relate to parents? In other words, do you get the parents engaged in that process from the get-go, or do you work more directly with the child? I mean, and maybe that's age dependent as well.
Yeah, I think it is age dependent, but a lot of it is about, you know, giving the parent, we give kids jobs during different procedures and things. We say, your job is to hold still, your job is to, you know, take big deep breaths. And we have to give parents jobs too sometimes, because the medical setting can be very confusing if you don't have any experience with it. And parents don't always know what their role is. So sometimes you just need to inform them what their role is going to be or what their job is going to be.
That's great.
Because it can give them some, you know, empower them as well to advocate for their child.
Yeah, clearly I think that this issue of being out of control, both for the patient, in this case a child, and for the parent, mm-hmm. it has got to be the overarching feeling,
yeah.
I think, because of all of not only the technology, which is intimidating, but also all the specialists running around and the fast pace. So it sounds to me like you're, in a way, the liaison or the bridge that allows the patient to really kind of find some kind of a homeostasis or a calm within that storm.
Yeah, I would say, you know, Child Life is a lot of times the liaison between the family and the medical team. I mean, they are part of the medical team and work closely with the medical team to provide the best care for the patient and family. But a lot of times they do sort of provide that bridge or gap that.
So do you get engaged? Let's say a child has a lengthy stay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what a lengthy stay is, but let's say a few weeks.
Okay.
Are you engaged in actually educating, playing, you know, again, depending on the age, working on those kinds of things with the child?
Absolutely.
I know years ago, I used to work in a children's hospital many, many years ago, and there were always, quote unquote, the play ladies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But this is somewhat different, though.
So Child Life used to be referred to as a play ladies, but as a profession has grown, you know, it's sort of grown out of that title. But it is similar that Child Life, when we have kids who have lengthy stays, we still want them to have some normalization, even in the hospital. So we do provide a lot of play opportunities, a lot of opportunities to do things that they would be doing at home or at school. You know, we do have a school teacher on staff that will work with kids who have lengthy stays, because we really want to keep their schedule and routine as close to as what it would be at their home.
And does that involve also helping them with schoolwork? I mean, for example, if a kid is school age and mm-hmm. missing a week or two of school, obviously that's a concern both to the child and to the parents. So do you get engaged in that as well?
Child Life specialists as much do not work on the schoolwork, but we do have a school teacher on staff who will tutor kids and do, you know, all their state testing and things that they are missing at school.
So they don't really have to miss a beat, so to
right,
speak.
Right.
How about with siblings? I'm curious there, because obviously it's quite often that children come from families with other children. How do you deal with siblings, or are they encouraged to be a part of this?
Yeah, absolutely. So Child Life really treats the whole family. It's very, very family-centered. So we do work a lot with siblings, especially if we have kids who are in the hospital for a long time. It's important that the siblings are involved in the patient's care also, because sometimes siblings can be, you know, almost put on the back burner at times when they have a a child who is sick in their family, especially if they're in the hospital for an extended period of time. But we do a lot of education with siblings too about what the patient is going through and how can they help the patient, and maybe, you know, what are some of the feelings that the siblings are having, and, you know, what they can do to sort of deal with some of the issues that they're going through as well.
Yeah, I would think that would be very, very important, because obviously, as we understand, families are a unit.
Mm-hmm.
And when one part of the family is malfunctioning, so to speak, it affects the entire family. So this idea of working with the entire family sounds very sound.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes, you know, we have siblings who come to visit maybe in the ICU, and sometimes their siblings might have different tubes and things that they're hooked up to that are scary looking and threatening. And if Child Life will often meet with these kids before they see their brother and sister and explain to them what all this equipment is for, so that when they go in, they're able to see their brother and sister more than the equipment or the tubes that are hooked to them.
That makes so much sense. Once again, it's that whole notion of knowledge changes everything.
Right. A little preparation
goes
a long way.
A lot of feeling of or knowing changes everything, that there's a sense of control or mm-hmm. At least having that sense of, it may be illusory, but the sense of empowerment,
yeah.
You know, in a setting that can be overwhelming. How about, do you help parents or families if there are bereavement or grief issues? Is that another part of
your
role?
We do, yep. That is a big part of our role. Specifically in the ER, a lot of times our bereavements are obviously not expected, and a lot of times are traumatic. So we do, you know, offer families a chance to grieve and say goodbye to their child. And then inpatient units, typically they have a little bit more time, families do, to kind of accept or, you know, deal with what's going pending or what may be happening. But we do offer different bereavement services. We do handprints and things like that for the family to take with them, sort of some remembrances for the family to take home with them.
Yeah, I can't think of anything child. More difficult.
Yeah.
Not only for the family, but for you as a professional.
Yeah. It is difficult, but I think that you kind of see how this is going to benefit the family and how that it is going to promote their healing and, you know, ability to kind of deal with the situation the best they can. And we do offer resources as far as, you know, community resources and what can they do for follow-up and working with siblings and that kind of thing, to helping siblings understand, especially younger siblings, what this means, because a lot of times kids developmentally have a very different understanding of what death is, and, you know, Child Life can play a big role in explaining what that means.
So what kind of training does this require? I understand you're a certified Life specialist. Tell me, I mean, obviously you have to have some very extensive background in child development. You alluded to that.
Mm-hmm. There is a child, you can come to Child Life kind of from different ways, but so a lot of people have a child development background. I specifically have a Child Life degree. And then there's a 480-hour internship. It's a minimum of 480 hours that has to be completed under a certified Child Life specialist. And then there's a certification exam that you have to sit for.
But your background would have to be, when you say I have a Child Life degree, mm-hmm. what does that constitute?
So it kind of is a lot of psychology, a lot of child development, death and dying, as well as a lot of anatomy and physiology. And you have to know the medical background, because if you have to explain it to a child, you have to know what's going on and be able to break it down developmentally.
Yeah, it seems to me that's all of those fields have to play a significant role.
Yeah.
It's a very, very challenging career path, I think, but sounds like potentially incredibly rewarding.
Yes, and I think it's both.
Yeah, it sounds like we have an incredible resource here in Central New York with what you have to offer. And I'm so pleased you were able to come in and tell us about it today. In the just second we have left, do you ever work with outpatients as well or no?
So the emergency room is considered an outpatient unit. So I work there, but there's also a child life specialist in the hematology oncology clinic. And then UHCC also has a child life specialist.
Wonderful. Well, Rachel Hannon, certified child life specialist with Upstate Scalasano Children's Hospital. We're really fortunate to have you. Thanks so much for coming today. We have to take a short break. Please stay with us. I'm Linda Cohen. This is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio, 106.9 and 570 WSYR.